Well, Patty, we had a great interview today with Dustin Magaziner. He is often a guest on the show and talked about point of sale systems and how to sell it, how to support it.
I always enjoy our conversations with Dustin. In fact, as I told him at the end of the conversation, today's interview, it's like every time I talk to you, Dustin, I want to like put away my keyboard and go out and start selling.
Yeah,
you know?
I know, right?
Because he gets you so psyched up.
Yeah,
you know, he's really, you know, and what he's done for his agents and for the 1099s, I think, is really pretty remarkable. So
it is.
And then you had a great, you kind of carried that through in your question from the field.
Yeah, I talked about building 1099 agent distribution. There's really unique challenges, and I think a lot of our listeners now that are, you know, ISV owners or their ISOs, there's challenges about building an ISO channel, and I've kind of noticed some patterns over the years of kind of how to do it the wrong way, and so I talk about that, and then and then give us some insight on the insight.
Well, it's our ongoing discussion about Senator Durbin and what he's up to in terms of wanting to get Visa, MasterCard up on the Hill.
Yeah, good stuff. Well, before we jump into this one, I do want to mention that Dustin Magaziner and PayBright, they are actually an advertising partner with CC Sales Pro. However, that contract is to do some other work for them. This interview is not a paid interview or anything, but I do want to be really clear about that and always be transparent that they do pay a small amount for some advertising work with us. So with that being said, let's dive into this interview.
Let's do it.
Welcome to the Merchant Sales Podcast.
Hey, everybody. We are here with our good friend, Dustin Magaziner, CEO at PayBright. How are you doing today, Dustin?
I'm doing great. It's almost, awesome. You know, 5 o'clock on a Friday. So can't complain here. It's been a great week.
Oh, good. That's awesome. Well, I'm excited to talk to you today about what I consider a very hot topic, probably should even be a hotter topic than it is, which is selling point of sale systems. You know, this is something 1099s have really struggled with for a variety of reasons, which we're going to discuss today. And we're going to talk about what you're doing with your POS help desk and some of these new things that you're rolling out to help with this. But before we dive into that, I thought it'd be helpful for you to just kind of give us your thoughts on the payments industry. You know, since the last time we had you on the podcast, you're on here quite a bit. But like, how do you view the things that are happening and the trends and, you know, kind of what's interesting in your world of payment processing today?
Oh, there's a lot here. You know, without getting too far down the rabbit hole, I think right now the payments industry is a great industry to be in. I think right now from what we see, and you may have better data on this with your analysis tools, I think margins are higher than we've ever seen them, largely due to some of the increases some competitors have done. Consolidation is continuing, which is great for independent agents, but also technology is becoming more important in the sales world. Right. 5-10 years ago, the model was go out and sell terminals, and you can still do that. You can still have a great portfolio that way.
Right.
But more and more agents are having to learn technology. And so that's been a big focus of what we've done here at PayBright over the last 18 months or so, and we'll continue to invest in moving forward. But I think it's a great time to be in payments.
Yeah, couldn't agree more.
I agree.
So, all right. So let's start this topic here by talking about these 1099s. So I know this is something you're very passionate about. So 1099 agents, they're out in the field today. What are the challenges that they are facing? I mean, it's no secret. Like if you polled all the 1099 agents in my Facebook group and said, how important is it to be able to sell point of sale solutions? Everybody would give it a 10 out of 10. It's like, everybody knows it. And yet.
And then how many are you selling point of sale systems?
Right. And now we dropped
like
to 2.
1 out of 10.
Right. So where is this gap? What are these kind of challenges? And in your mind, you know, when you look back, say 5 or 10 years ago, how has their experience changed out in the field trying to sell merchants?
Yeah. So funny. You said if we were to poll people in your group, I actually think about a year or two, I did. I think I created a poll that said.
I do remember when you did that, Dustin. Yes, I do.
You know,
yes.
What was the top of the list? POS, number one. It wasn't, I wish I had better commissions. It was all about POS.
Right.
And I think that it's more important today than it ever was. I think the independent agent in this business has struggled for a long time, and it's getting harder. More companies are going proprietary. More companies that sell software and technology are going in-house sales, right? Call centers, calling on your businesses. And processing isn't even what they're selling, right? I mean, I don't think Toast reps think they sell processing.
Right.
They sell Toast, which is a point of sale.
Right.
So there's this changing of the guard, so to speak, where you have all of these payments people that have great portfolios, great connections in their communities, but they don't know what to sell. They don't know necessarily how to sell it. And I think that's a really tough gap to bridge. And most of the ISOs that these agents are working with have kind of said, you have Clover, good luck. or go out and partner with your own POS providers and best of luck. And I think that's a problem too.
Right.
I don't think it's an organized approach. It leads agents down the wrong, you know, kind of path a lot of the times, and it doesn't always leave them with a great taste in their mouth. So I think it's been a challenging, you know, journey for some agents trying to figure out the POS game. And of course, you know, we're trying to do it a little bit differently, but I think it's only going to become more important as time goes on.
Yeah. And one of the other interesting things about it to me is dual pricing, differential pricing, cash discounting, whatever, right? You know, I call it differential pricing to kind of encompass everything. I really believe in it, and I haven't heard too many other people say this, but it's like, when I look at the market, I really truly believe that that trend was like the salvation for the 1099 for a couple of reasons. One, you already mentioned, was increased margin. But the other reason is because it was so compelling for local merchants that they were still willing to have that standalone terminal when it was the wrong solution. It really, you know what I mean? Like, they should have had a point of sale already. They should have inventory control. They should have, you know, integrated marketing, whatever, but they don't, because they wanted dual pricing and that was only available on a terminal. However, right now we see this, like, no, you can get dual pricing on a point of sale system. No problem. It's actually even better it's actually more compliant. Like, it's great. And so now they're really struggling where it's like, okay, well, wait, now what do I do? Like, now people are coming in and saying, oh, well, we won't charge any processing fees and we'll give you a great point of sale system. Yeah. And it's like, oh crap, what do I do now? You know? So I think we're seeing that is, you know, so here's my next question for you, Dustin. As these agents try to adjust and to this new reality, what I've seen some of them do is kind of reach out and try to make their own partnerships with point of sale companies.
Yeah.
I know this is something you have a ton of experience in. What are the challenges that they are facing, and what do you want to tell them about that? You know, like, let me go directly to this, you know, processor agnostic point of sale solution and make my own deal as an independent agent. What are your thoughts?
So I have several things. One, that's sometimes the right approach. I mean, there's nothing inherently wrong with that. I just don't always know that it's the best approach. To me, part of the ISO's responsibility is to provide services to their agents. And I think that's one of the services that they should provide, is the experience and the support of that. Part of the benefit of working with a larger player is better negotiation, better pricing, but also better contracts. And we've all seen these agnostic systems, these processor agnostic systems, be somewhat predatory towards independent agents, right? Come, bring me your merchant, sign 20 merchants with me, and then in 6 months or a year, I'm going to kick you out of that system, and you sign the agreement that I had, and you have no protections. And so I'm not going to say we're perfect, because no company is perfect, but I have a lot of confidence that we probably legal the documents and make sure the relationships are a little bit more protected. We have more clout, hopefully, than what an independent agent gets. So I think, one, protecting your portfolio is huge, and you may not be able to get that. Two, the sales process isn't as streamlined. Each agent having to spend their time to source a POS doesn't really make sense. If I have, let's just say, 100 agents that are all going and having to do this work, they're not spending it out in the field selling. I'd rather have one centralized person on my team who's responsible for bringing products to us and to our agents. Way more effective, way more efficient. And then you have technical issues that you run into, right? What platform does the system need to be on? What's the VAR sheet or equipment look like? And we see issues with this from time to time when an agent does bring a third-party point of sale into the mix. There's miscommunications as to who's providing the PIN pads, what the VAR sheet needs to look like. It needs to be on a specific platform. So I think there's a much better way to do it than to have each of your agents go and connect with these various systems and not always know what they're getting into. So we've tried to take a lot of that out of the hands of our agents and provide that for them.
Yeah, I agree. And I think one interesting thing to me is it's so important to understand as an agent, are you 100% focused on a single vertical, right? In that context, it's like, okay, maybe, right? Maybe you go make a one partnership with a software or whatever for that vertical, making sure you have the money and the expertise to pay a great legal, you know, a great attorney or someone, right? But it's like, if you're just selling in a local market, it's really not practical, because even if you're like, well, I'm going to restrict myself and I'm only going to sell 8 verticals, which would be very restrictive. Well, you need to figure out 8 different partnerships. Like, that's very expensive from a legal perspective. It's really challenging to set that up, and very difficult from an operational perspective to streamline it, you know, and on the list goes. So, so I guess the next natural question here, Dustin, would be, what has PayBright done? What have you guys done on your team to, you know, set up these partnerships? You alluded to it a minute ago. You know, it's no secret that most processor agnostic, and I'm using air quotes for those who aren't watching on the video version here, processor agnostic solutions. Most of them either are currently planning to do payments in-house, or they don't realize it yet, but as soon as they get acquired by the private equity firm in 2 years, they'll do payments in-house. So what are you doing to kind of establish those relationships and protect the portfolios of these agents that are part of your community?
Yeah. So first, we built out a team here called our POS desk. It's a team just dedicated towards our agents. These are not in-house salespeople. They don't go out and solicit merchants. They just are here to support agents and their merchants in the POS sales process. This is a sales team. This is not a tech support team. I hate the idea of demos and things like that being done by a tech person. It happens all the time in this industry with POS. But this is a team dedicated towards just helping our sales partners sell POS. And so this team's job is first to go out and source new solutions, right? Every couple of weeks, they have a meeting about what gaps do we feel like we have, and let's go out and source it. From there, of course, they get these relationships up and running. But then from there, we also demo and help co-sell these systems. Because the reality is, if I have an agent who's never sold a system before, the first time she's selling it or that he's selling it doesn't know about it.
That's going to be a mess.
And it's what we see all the time. And so we are actually getting on the call and helping this agent land that POS deal that they've never sold before. Some of these agents have never, you know, worked in a restaurant before, and now they're trying to sell a restaurant point of sale. That's really difficult. Mm-hmm. And so our team is an expert in these systems and what's needed. The other advantage is that, unlike working with a third-party point of sale, we don't care what system is sold, right? If I go and partner with ABC POS and I bring them into the demo, they only make a commission. They only make money if they make that sale. So they may sometimes try to fit a square peg in a round hole, and most agents have experienced this. If we, you know, suggest that we work with system A and it's not the right fit, we're just going to pivot because we just care about the processing like the agent. And so it's been a much better, you know, process. Our closing ratios have skyrocketed. Implementations have skyrocketed because we manage the implementation and install process for all of these deals as well, menu builds and everything like that. And overall, it has just completely smoothed this, you know, kind of world for us and our agents. I mean, it's night and day today what it was 2 years ago for us in the POS world. Mm-hmm. So it has really been a game changer for us and for a lot of our sales partners.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
So, okay, but there are a lot of verticals out there that use in-person point-of-sale solutions, as you're familiar with. You know, and I'm wondering, how much market coverage do you have? And what are your plans to expand that? Because that seems like a real keen opportunity.
For sure. We like to say we have the overwhelming majority covered. Now, whether or not it's the solution the merchant's looking for or the agent is looking for, of course, is going to depend on the situation. Some verticals, there are a lot more options than others. Mm-hmm. We've got food and beverage covered. We've got liquor stores and convenience stores and general retail covered. We've got, you know, the beauty industry covered. We've got the medical industry covered really well. But then you start getting into some that we all know are harder, right? It's hard to compete with MindBody sometimes. Mm-hmm. They've got really good, you know, kind of corner on some of that market. So we have competing softwares that we work with all day long, mm-hmm. but it's harder to convert a merchant sometimes from one system to the other when they have all their reoccurring, all their memberships and so on.
Yeah, sure.
The auto industry is another one that's really, really hard to find solutions for. There's a few players in that space that just dominate, and it is really hard to tap into that market unless you're doing side terminals still, right? And
repair
and things like that. But we like to believe that we have the overwhelming majority of verticals covered, especially the verticals agents are living in. So it's pretty rare that we say no. You know, part of what
likes to say no anyway.
Yeah, we don't like to say no. But part of what our POS desk does as well is not just help with new sales, but also integration support. And that's a big chunk, right? So again, with a lot of traditional ISO relationships, the agents out there that come across a system and they're responsible for going and doing the research about if they can integrate, what that looks like. And oftentimes they lose the deal in that process. And so the nice part is here, our team's doing all of that as well. So it's not always just about selling a new system, but how do we plug into the existing one?
Yeah,
so path of least resistance is what we try to approach.
Well, let's speaking about existing systems, you know, there's plenty of merchants out there who have a point of sale system that they love. They just don't want to part with it. You know, what can be done in those situations, and how does this POS desk, or I think that's what you called it, right?
POS desk.
How is it handling those deals?
Case by case. You know, if a merchant has Toast and they absolutely love it, I mean, if they're not willing to talk about something else, there's no further conversation, unfortunately. It doesn't matter how much we wish, it's not It's not something you're plugging into most likely.
Sure, you can't. Yeah.
So it does come down to the system, but our team, they're experts in integrations as well. And so if there's a way in, we can do it. And we do a ton of them, from really common systems that agents are told from other companies are proprietary that you can't get into. A lot of the time we have ways in. We have established relationships with these softwares. Not saying everything, and it depends on what it is. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. I'll say pretty confidently that if there's a way in, we are probably on the forefront of it. There's okay. exceptions to everything, but we make it our business to figure out how to work with these softwares the best we can.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the other thoughts I had on this, Dustin, is I know that you're, you know, a big proponent, maybe even the leader in the industry right now in terms of the idea of like free terminal placement, right? Free equipment, free hardware.
Right.
How does that, yeah, how does that translate? Now we're talking about point of sale systems where it might be 10,000, 5,000, 20,000, you know, like now we're talking about some big numbers.
Yeah.
What, how are you handling that aspect of like overcoming this initial switching where there's hardware involved?
Yeah, so great question. We're doing more investing in equipment than we've ever done. Because here's the thing. If I invest in a $10,000 system, it's a bigger chunk of an investment, of course. But if I'm putting in a POS that is sticky, I also increase my lifetime value that I'm looking at. And so before, maybe my lifetime value was a third of what it is today. Especially if I'm getting XYZ system POS as opposed to, you know, side terminal. So we're able to look at the economics a little more favorably on a lifetime value perspective, which allows us to invest more. The other advantage is one of the things I was always concerned with when an agent brought a deal to us, right? So one of the things agents would come is, hey, they're using this POS that I have a relationship with, can PayBright fund it? Was I was always cautious, one, about what the implementation process would look like. Because if I invest in that system and implementation doesn't go well, I lose money.
Right.
And two, I was worried, what if that company ends up not being agnostic in a year? I paid for them to have a merchant.
Right.
And so our POS desk as well has allowed us to invest for two more reasons. Is one, our implementation has been much smoother. And two, I feel much more confident that these systems are actually going to remain with PayBright, or these merchant accounts will remain with PayBright. So we're doing a lot more on the placement side as well with these POS opportunities, whether it's providing it completely free, whether we're financing it ourselves, or just, you know, financing on the deal. We've broken these deals down in a number of ways to get creative depending on the details. But I always like to say, if the economics make sense, we will figure out a way to make the deal happen.
You've said that before on this podcast, Dustin. It seems to be your credo.
Kind of. We just did a sales call with our team Wednesday, and the entire webinar was on flexible ways paper to help on financing and funding, right?
Right.
From free placement to, you know, residuals to whatever it needs to be. If the deal makes sense, let's talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think one of the other really interesting things is I was talking earlier about, you know, dual pricing and kind of this overlap with point of sale. And it's like, well, you know, it used to be when I was selling point of sale, and I would invest a lot of money as an individual agent, you know, trying to place these deals. I remember one deal cost me like $40,000 when I was an individual agent, which was insane. Where I wanted the deal so bad, I actually did a buyout. I didn't have any money, so I sold my like smaller accounts to get like 60 grand so I could do this one big account, which was a great trade. But one of the issues I had back then with justifying it was, I'm like, well, I was selling them on, you know, it was a big merchant. So they were getting like interchange plus, you know, 15 basis points and 5 cents or something, you know what I mean? Whereas today, these bigger accounts are ridiculously profitable because you're putting them on dual pricing and you've got 160 basis points on, you know, $1 million a month or something. It's like, wow, there's a little bit more to justify, right, in those situations.
Even cash discount or dual pricing or surcharging, differential pricing aside, even on traditional pricing models, we still see the margins far higher today than I was selling when I was out in the field 10 years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I was writing deals. I hate saying this, right? Certain agents don't listen to me right now, but I was selling deals all the time at 5 basis points, right? I mean, that was normal. Right. 6 basis points, 10 was great, right?
Right, right.
Now, it's pretty rare that we see deals under 25 basis points. I mean, it's just, you know, all these rate increases our competitors have all done. And merchants are paying $125 monthly compliance fees, and they're, you know, paying 100 basis points over interchange while they're doing 300,000 a month in volume. I mean, it's crazy where the prices have gone. I mean,
it's insane.
And, you know, differential pricing is only a portion of that. I mean, we have traditional accounts that have great margins. And, you know, again, you know, Toast is a prime example. Toast isn't cheap, right? But they're not doing differential pricing.
Right.
You know, there's still probably 50 to 80 basis points in margin, which we weren't getting that on restaurants 10 years ago.
Right.
Not even close.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
Margins are definitely there right now.
I couldn't agree with you more. Okay. One last question here that I want to throw out there that I think is interesting. You know, when we think about the sales process today for a 1099, what is it? You know, like it's changed so much. And specifically, I'm interested in, okay, for you guys, like, so you set up this POS desk, right? Well, this is a struggle because like 1099s, a lot of times they go to these technology partners and the technology partner treats them like a referral partner. And they don't like that. They're like, no, I'm a salesperson. I want to have a partnership. But at the same time, they can kind of, you can kind of get in the way of your own deal if you're not really careful, because maybe you don't really know that point of sale. So how do, what is this new reality or this new context for a sales process to sell a merchant as a 1099 agent?
So it depends on the agent, you know, and this is something that the head of our POS desk and I talk about from time to time is, he goes, Dustin, agent A needs, you know, us to do everything. Like,
right.
They literally say, here's the number to our POS desk, Mr. Merchant, call in. And then Merchant B basically wants us to do nothing besides make a recommendation and a demo. Like, that's it. And do a quote.
Right.
And sometimes it's in the middle. But really, it depends on the agent. So our POS desk first helps a lot with consultation, right? What does this merchant need? Let's just say it's a restaurant. Do they need cloud-based? Do they need server? Do they need handhelds with pay at the table or not? Do they need kiosks? Is it quick service? Do they need open bar tabs? Is it fine dining? What's the volume? Let's talk about volume for a moment, right? Let's talk about the needs of this merchant, because the reality is one merchant needs one system and the other merchant doesn't, because those features make a difference. Do they need inventory management, third-party, you know, integrations? Do they need delivery management? These are all different features. And unfortunately, not one system tends to kind of check every single box, including price sometimes. Mm-hmm. So right. Let's talk about what this merchant really is looking for, their price range, how interested they may or may not be. And let's then go to the merchant with this proposal, right? And do this demo and try to land this sale. And they will schedule that demo. They will get on the call with the agent and the merchant in real time. And their salespeople, right? Their job is to be able to talk from the POS angle instead of the processing angle. And it's, again, been a huge accomplishment and a huge, you know, improvement. Then we have some agents that just say, I just want a recommendation and a quote.
Right.
I don't even need a demo. And then others who, right. you know,
yeah.
need more or less. So it depends on the agent. But really the nice part is you have somebody that's at your processor that understands what your margins are. They can then, of course, make concessions or discounts because maybe we're going to cover a part. So that's, again, where some of the nice part is you're not calling a processor for one thing and a POS company for another. It's all
right.
in place. But ultimately, that's what the relationship kind of looks like, is it's a very consultative approach with our agents and our merchants
right.
or the mutual merchant. And, you know, we really look for the win-win solution for everyone and then hold their hand through implementation and install.
Sure. Love it. Well, so Dustin, I know a lot of people in our audience are going to want to reach out. They're going to want to know more about the POS desk and just kind of PayBright in general. For those who want to reach out and learn more, where would you send them?
Best place is you can call in, reach out to our team anytime, or of course, email in or go to our website. Our line to reach out to our team is just 984-272-2568. And you'd probably want to go to option 3, which would be for prospective new partners. Or of course, you can go to our website, which is just gopaybright.com. So either of those options would get to us.
Awesome. Could you repeat that phone number one more time, just because a little slower?
Yeah, it's 984-272-2568.
Or get paybright.com.
Go paybright.com.
Excuse me, exactly.
Go paybright.
Good stuff. Dustin, always such a pleasure having you on the podcast. I'm excited about what you're doing and excited about what it's going to do for the 1099s in the industry. So thanks again for joining us today. So, Patty, last week we had Vlad jump on the podcast and make an announcement about
right.
the professional card.
I love it.
Yeah. And so if you have not gotten yours yet, this is a card specifically designed for payments professionals. Couple of key benefits that you want to be aware of. Number one is this 1% cash back offer that runs through September on all of your spend. And then the other one is that, you know, Vlad and the team at Nativia are definitely famous for their parties, after parties and stuff at the shows. And the cards are what you're going to be using to get into these parties and have special benefits when you get there and all of that. So there's that part of it. And then there's
cool.
a bunch of other cool things he's working on, ways to
and
get
And you
paid.
Can use it as a card to charge. And
of course. Yeah. And you can get paid residuals faster. You can get financing on hardware that you're buying. So there's a bunch of really cool benefits like that. But all
Very
that
cool.
to say, head over and get that card right now. It's nativia.com/professional. So nativia.com/professional. Head over there and get your payment professional card.
This is Questions from the Field, brought to you by ccsalespro.com, the leader in merchant sales training and technology. And now, here is Questions from the Field with James Shepherd.
Patty, I wanted to kind of continue a little bit of this theme we were talking to Dustin about, but I want to talk about 1099 distribution from a higher level. So this is not actually for, you know, the 1099 agent themselves. This is for the people who want to run and manage the 1099 team. And the thing I want to talk about is, you know, one of the challenges with the 1099 team is the amount of variance that exists within a 1099 team. And specifically, I'm really talking to a lot of our ISV listeners, you know, those who own ISVs that are like, oh, wow, we want to get in the payment space. And they're kind of like, they view the 1099 channel as kind of this free money. Like, man, we could just straight commission, bring us a sale. This is great. And what happens is they start down that road and they generally do very badly. And a lot of them will reach out to me. And, you know, the key thing you have to understand is there is no such thing as a stereotypical 1099 merchant services sales rep. That doesn't exist.
No, of course not. Of course not.
You know, it's, there are 1099 agents who specialize in a single vertical and they've been doing that for 10 years. Mm-hmm. There are 1099 agents that have never sold a merchant in their life and they don't even know what they're doing. And there's everything in between. And so in order to actually, you know, scale something like that, and Dustin alluded to it a little bit ago, but you have to build a program that is very flexible. And so you're not trying to serve this persona of like a 1099 person.
Right,
it's like,
right.
no,
because
there's
it can be anybody as different as you and me.
Right. Right.
We're very different.
Yes. And so there's this huge kind of variance out there. And so what you have to do is you have to focus more on the kind of functional disciplines that you need to have inside your organization to service a 1099 team. And Dustin, beautifully alluded to pretty much all of them, right? But it's this idea of you're going to have the sales process. It's going to include like the demo and some of that. And you're like, well, okay, so I always need to do a demo. No, sometimes the agent is going to say, I want to be an expert in your system and I'm going to demo it myself. Right. Other agents are going to say, are you kidding me? I couldn't imagine. I could never do a demo. And it's like, well, you're going to have to do the demo for them, right? Then you go on to, getting the sale done, right? Closing the deal. Well, you'll have some 1099s that are like, I can't close the deal because I don't even know enough of what I'm talking about to do that. So you have a team that can close the sale. And of course, in those cases, you're probably paying less money to that 1099 agent. But then you have other agents that are like, how dare you try to close my sale? It's my sale. I'm going to go close it myself,
right?
You know? And it's like very confusing a lot of times to technology companies because they're kind of like, what kind of a distribution channel is this? And the answer is it's not. It's not an individual distribution channel.
Right.
There's no such thing as a 1099 distribution channel. There are only these individual people.
There are agents that happen to be
1099.
Taken together. Can create sales, but they're not necessarily a channel.
Yeah, it's not a monolith. You know, it's not like that kind of a channel. And so, you know, then you have the installation process. Now, what I will say is, as far as installation goes, and I would even say demo and installation, those are two phases where the vast majority of agents appreciate a technology company that will do that for them. Right.
Yeah, sure.
They don't really love that part of it. It's really funny. I actually, Patty, last week. So I'm in the process of shooting some content for a point of sale company. So
you
I went out
and quite the movie star, my friend. You're doing all these contents and
that's fun.
Demos and installs and
So I went out to do this install and they had sent someone out to do the install. You know, flew somebody out to the install.
Sure.
And it was just funny because. We're shooting this video of how easy it is to do an installation, right?
Right.
Well, of course, as we get into it, there's
about
a 4.5 hour gap where we hit a snag. And, you know, here I'm there, this guy's there. Neither one of us can do anything about this because it's some IP address issue and it has to be fixed by the process. You know, and we're like dealing with all this stuff. And it's like, that's hard. And so as an agent, most of them do want the installation. But again, you're going to have some that are like, no, I'll install it myself.
Right.
And then you have support.
This is my baby.
Right. So you have to focus on these kind of functional components of the process, and you have to make sure that you have complete flexibility. So with each of these functions, building out a 1099 distribution means that you're able to do all of it, or you're willing to allow the agent to do all of it or anything in between.
Or in between.
Right. Yeah. And so then the other thing I'll say, though, that kind of dovetails with this is building a 1099 distribution channel is about personal relationships and connection.
Oh, for sure.
You would think
throughout the thing, not just, you know, between the agents and the ISO, between the agents and the customers. I mean, it's relationship.
Well, yeah, and I think, you know, it sounds kind of obvious to say that, but again, the perception a lot of times, even from a lot of legacy ISOs, is that the 1099 channel, it's almost like the beauty of it is you don't have to deal with it. You just recruit them and you give them some videos and you say, good luck.
Good luck. And if you don't come back, oh well. If you come back with a bunch of sales, lucky me.
Right. And unfortunately, there's several big problems with that approach. The biggest one is just how much opportunity it leaves on the table. You know, there are so many really, really good agents that if you actually reached out to them and paid for their plane ticket to come meet with you, or, you know, sent somebody to demo something, you know, actually treat them like a person, like, okay, if you were going to hire this person and pay them $80,000 a year, what would the onboarding process look like? Mm-hmm. And make it like that, right? Like train them, help them understand what they're doing. And by doing that, you'll be really surprised that actually some of these people that otherwise aren't going to do anything, once they really understand, they've connected with you, then they feel like they're partnered with you, they're actually going to go do something. Now, does that mean all of them are? No. Just like if you hired a team of W-2 agents, many of them are going to turn over the first 90 days. Like that's sales, right? But I think when you treat people more like a partner, these 1099s, what you're going to find is they're going to appreciate that. And that's kind of what you have to do. Otherwise, you're left with this brutal numbers game of throw it against the wall and see if it sticks. Right. And the big issue with that approach is two things. Obviously, one, it doesn't work. You don't get very many deals. But the other issue is even the deals you get are generally going to be terrible because the agents are not trained. They're not supported. Right. They don't know what they're doing. So they're going to overpromise. They're going to give false information. And as a result, the deals that you do get in, you're like, wow, this 1099 channel really sucks. You know, we get these people. They don't even know what they all want, this is the common thing I hear from ISVs are like, these 1099s, they all want something different. You know, they don't seem to know what they're doing. We don't get very many deals and the ones we do are wrong. They're messed up. And it's like, right. And that's because you have to have a very flexible program. You have to make solid connections with these people, right?
Partnerships are important, not only between the ISO and the agent. I mean, clearly that's important, but you know, how can you have the partnership between the agent and the client if there is not the upstream partnership?
Right. Because if they don't understand what they're doing, they're not going to be able to add value to that merchant.
Exactly.
And as a result, the merchant's not really going to want to deal with them too much either. So a couple of tips for you. If you're looking at building out a 1099 distribution channel, my biggest thing to remember is that no such thing exists. There is a channel of independent people who are all very different, who might be willing to sell your stuff. And that's what a 1099 distribution channel is. It's not one singular thing of like a persona or anything like that. And that's what you find when you get into it. So hopefully those are some tips that'll help you if you're scaling 1099s.
This is the Insider's Report with Patty Murphy, brought to you by The Green Sheet. For nearly 40 years, The Green Sheet has been the go-to source for news, analysis, and educational tools that empower and connect payments professionals. If you're not reading The Green Sheet already, check it out on the web today at www.greensheet.com.
Well, James, I want to give an update on Senator Durbin. Looks like he's bruising for a fight. He has summoned the CEOs of Visa and MasterCard to Washington. He only wants the CEOs. Nobody else is going to do.
Okay. And are they complying with this summons?
They've sent up, you know, the high-ranking people, but not the presidents and CEOs, and that's what he wants to talk to. It's not just the card companies either. He wants United Airlines and American Airlines presidents to be there as well.
Really?
The reason for the coupling is that airlines have the biggest and most popular card rewards programs out there.
Oh, okay.
Okay, now the four companies, when you put them together, are vocal opponents to Durbin's Credit Card Competition Act. You know, one that Durbin thinks is going to save Americans billions of dollars. And he added that American and United have become credit card companies that fly planes because they've become so so hooked on the rewards programs. Although I would venture that it's the passengers that are hooked on the rewards programs.
Right.
I don't know about you. I have a friend who flies a lot and who, I mean, he called me up one time. He's like, "Could you fly with me out to California?" And it was the middle of the COVID. I'm like, "Dude, I really don't want to fly, get on a plane in the middle of COVID."
Yeah.
He's like, "Don't worry, I have plenty of miles. I'll put us on first class."
Yeah.
You have that many miles, you can put two of us in first class? I mean, that's a lot of miles.
Right.
Anyway, Senator Durbin is scheduled an April 9th hearing before the Judiciary Committee, which he chairs, on competition in the credit card industry. Mostly, though, he wants to ask the CEOs of Visa and MasterCard, along with United and American, to justify their claims that the Credit Card Competition Act will torpedo credit card rewards programs. The legislation, as we talked about, would require that merchants have the option of choosing from at least two networks for processing payments, only one of which can be owned by Visa and MasterCard. Now, the Electronic Payments Coalition, which we've talked about before, argues the legislation would impact small businesses as much as it does consumers. And it points to a new study out of the University of Miami that reveals how small business owners would lose roughly $12 billion in credit card rewards that they already use, that they amass when making purchases with their business credit cards. And that's about a tenth of the yearly reward points that are given out. So, you know, and I think you and I have talked about this in the past, and it may be that I didn't talk with you, I talked with Vlad, but I did talk with one of you about this in the past and about how much small businesses are really hooked on these rewards programs. You know, they pay for a lot of the stuff. And I think that's where he's going to come into, that's where he's going to, you know, knock heads is with the small business groups when he starts realizing that how much they really do rely on these rewards programs.
I the more I've read about it, I just feel like his bill is just very unpopular. I don't know
it's
that
it's not
there's...
popular at all. In fact, I talked to a couple of lobbyists up on the Hill a few weeks ago, and they said there's no appetite whatsoever for this legislation.
Yeah.
But I think he's just going to keep on, you know, he's
yeah.
one of these people. He did it back years ago when I used to cover judiciary. He did it with bankruptcy. He just keeps knocking away until finally somebody says uncle.
Well, and I think also he's knocking away to try to find an angle. You know, he needs he needs a news peg that works for this. And so far he hasn't found it. So it's like he's hoping he can have an interview. And I saw in there that the two, I think one or two of the airline executives had refused to appear previously.
Right.
And I think they all realize like he doesn't have the clout right now. So, you know, I think they would be best suited to stay away because he's all he's doing is he's looking for them to mess up and say something. Right now, he doesn't have a case, you know?
He doesn't have a case now, but they have to be careful that if they don't show up and he then decides he's going to issue a subpoena, that doesn't look good either.
Exactly right. But I think right now this particular bill is so unpopular.
Oh, this bill isn't going to, I don't think it's going to go anywhere, but I do think it's interesting that he keeps bringing it up and keeps pushing it forward.
Yes.
And because of that, we need to really, you know, keep on top of it.
Yeah. Well, good stuff, Patty. Thanks for the update. I'm sure it'll be, I'm personally going to be tuning in on April 9th to see the testimony.
You'll be both.
So, thanks,
thankfully,
Patty.
We can do it now, you know, online with C-SPAN.
Right.
So.
We don't have to drive to DC, right?
Right.
So, good stuff, Patty. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Merchant Sales Podcast. Whether you are an industry veteran, processing executive, or just trying to learn about the payment space, we appreciate your time. The Merchant Sales Podcast is a joint production of GreenSheet.com and CCSalesPro.com, and we hope you will tune in next week for more information and tips on building your merchant services business.